Why did Occupy Oakland protesters shut down the port?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. We'll start up the California coast in Oakland, where one of the nation's busiest ports has been shut down by protesters. At this hour, police are using tear gas to disperse demonstrators from a plaza that's been the base for Occupy Oakland. For more on all this, we're joined by LA Times reporter Lee Romney, who's been covering the protests over the last 24 hours. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what's the latest right now? What's the status of the Port of Oakland?
The Port of Oakland opted earlier this evening to cancel their night shift of workers. So there are still protesters down there who are trying to prevent longshoremen from coming to work on the next shift, which will be either 3 a.m. or 6 a.m. Nobody's quite sure exactly. The port has not really said, you know, when they will try to send folks back in. But the demonstrators declared a victory earlier tonight when the port effectively said maritime operations are shut down and that evening shift of workers would not be attempting to enter.
And what did the protesters tell you about their reasons for going and trying to shut down the Port of Oakland? I saw the port released a statement and said, look, we're the 99%.
Yeah, I think that because it is such an economic engine, it's the fifth largest port in the country, does about an average of $8.5 million in business a day. For some, it symbolized wealth or capitalism. I think those are the more extreme folks. Also, the union has a contract clause that's very rare for unions that allows them to honor a community picket line under certain circumstances. And though there's some speculation that they chose the port because that union has that clause, and so they thought it might be easier to shut it down, whereas other unions have no strike clauses in their contracts.
Lee Romney, LA Times reporter, joining us from Oakland. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, there's some new analysis this morning on the number of Americans living in poverty. And listen to this figure. 1 in 15 are living 50% below the poverty line. A lifeline for them is the $70 billion a year food stamp program. But as Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer reports, it could be in line for big cuts.
The annual budget for food stamps doubled during the recession. Republicans say some of that growth is due to fraud, so they want to hold the food stamp budget at about $71 billion next year. Democrats want to spend about $80 billion. Charities say they wouldn't be able to keep up with demand if food stamp funding were cut. Paula Thornton Greer is a spokeswoman for Feeding America, which supplies food banks.
We're serving 37 million people each year, and that is a 46% increase from 2006.
Some economists say there would also be an impact on the broader economy if less was spent on food stamps. Sheila Zedleski analyzes food stamps at the Urban Institute. She says food stamp spending creates jobs.
You need clerks at the grocery store, truckers, food delivery, food production. It increases demand.
Zedleski says each food stamp dollar spent generates about $1.70 in economic activity. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are down across Europe and Asia this morning, down about 0.25% in Frankfurt right now, as the Greek government holds an emergency meeting. Another lawmaker in the ruling Socialist Party says she won't back the prime minister, cutting his majority in parliament to 1 ahead of a key confidence vote tomorrow. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow jumped 178 points to close at 11,836.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, offering Pop Money, a way to pay other people online by sending an email or text. Learn more at allybank.com. By Indiana University's Kelley School of Business, providing a personalized approach to career advancement. Learn more at kellei.iu.edu. And by Money Magazine's Take Charge Live, a series of events designed to help you take charge of your finances. November 16th at Boston College. Registration at moneytakecharge.com.
A group of U.S. senators has unveiled a plan to rescue the U.S. Postal Service. It would allow the USPS to tap the surplus from its retirement fund to help shore up its budget. That's one option. Others want the post office to go private completely. As Caitlin Carroll reports from Berlin, the Germans have already gone that route.
Germany. 1989. Change was in the air. The Berlin Wall was falling. The Cold War was ending. And the German Postal Service was privatizing.
The point was to get it out of the state budget, you know. That was the major point. And the second thing was to get competition.
Harold Gleisner teaches logistics and transportation at the Berlin School for Economics and Law. In the late 80s, Germany's postal service was dependable, but slow and losing money. So in 1995, the German government made Deutsche Post a private business, giving it more control over its operations.
It was a long process.
Gleisner saw that long process firsthand because his father ran a post office. Many post offices were consolidated. Retiring workers weren't replaced, and mail routes were centralized. As a private business, Deutsche Post could make these changes without federal approval. But the German government did create one stipulation.
There is a law to make sure that letters are distributed in any corner of the country.
Even with that logistical challenge, Deutsche Post is often touted as a privatization success story. It remained dependable, but also diversified. Deutsche Post now runs DHL, the express mail company, and it's responded well to the internet shopping boom. So the business is healthier, but are the customers any happier? At a flower shop near a post office in Berlin, opinions are mixed.
Finde ich es recht teuer geworden im Gegensatz zu
Antje Schmidt says mail seems more expensive now, and the lines are longer. Harold Gleisner says a national postal service doesn't need to be perfect, but it does need to be agile. He says in America, every major decision about mail delivery gets sent to Congress. And for the U.S. Postal Service, those stamps of approval may arrive too late to be effective. In Berlin, I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
And finally, CBS is out with earnings today, and amazingly, the network is still dealing with a financial issue from 2004. Remember the Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction from the Super Bowl? Well, an appeals court just ruled that CBS should not have to pay a $500,000 fine for that 7 years later. Wait till the courts find out about Charlie Sheen. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Nepotism, corruption, cronyism, all in a day's work for big business in Syria.
I love Syria. I love the president. I love everything he do. He give us a lot of promises and he achieve a lot of targets.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Syria, where being pro-government is good for the bottom line. That's next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.